much. It's a crucial day, not only for Zimbabwe, but for the whole SADC region and for Africa as a whole. And with those few words, I'd like to welcome you, Dr. Moyo.
So I've just come from Joburg and Pretoria, of course, and it's raining, it's pouring. So when I arrived there, I was surprised, but it's all sunshine. I speak better when there's sunshine, so I think I'll speak better than when I'm engulfed by rain. I was, of course, invited, Madam Chair, by your esteemed committee to come and brief honorable members about the latest developments pertaining to my country, Zimbabwe, as we move towards the harmonized elections on the 29th of March 2008. I think, Madam Chairperson, let me start by thanking you most profusely and members of your esteemed committee for the kind invitation to this very important briefing on the situation prevailing in Zimbabwe towards the run-up, as I've said earlier, to the harmonized elections on 29th March 2008. I would also wish, as much as practicable, to make this an interactive session where we exchange views and ideas and agree to disagree where possible. There are, of course, four presidential aspirants in terms of our coming elections who will do battle on 29th March 2008. I want to emphasize, of course, here that only the people of Zimbabwe can, through the ballot, tell the world who they think has the best interest of their heart in terms of the candidates. Only the people of Zimbabwe have got that right to declare who they think of the candidates has got the best interest of their heart, and nobody else. I'll come to that when I say nobody else, because I've got examples of some people who have extended their domain to far and large. But it is important as well to give a brief reference, perhaps, to the history of Zimbabwe, particularly the struggle for independence. And this would put the current political and economic environment in the country more in context. It would help explain some of the powerful forces at play in the run-up to these elections. In other words, we're experiencing a situation where events inside the country are interpreted both from within and from outside the country. It is, in my opinion, important to strike that balance when making an objective assessment of the situation in Zimbabwe. The premise of the movement for liberation, which culminated into an armed struggle spearheaded by ZANLA and ZIPRA forces, the respective military wings of ZANU and ZAPU, under the banner of the Patriotic Front, co-led by the late Dr. Joshua Nkomo and President Robert Mugabe, was to rid the country of an evil system, not a particular race or tribe. It is pertinent, therefore, to note that the core of that evil system was systematic deprivation of the means of production, in this case, land, to the majority of the country's inhabitants. The said situation literally saw 70% of most of the productive land in the country owned by 1% of the population for almost 90 years. 1% of the population, which happened to be white, owning 70% of all the productive land. This colonial legacy was at the center of the Lancaster House peace talks, which eventually brought about a ceasefire and subsequent elections in Zimbabwe. The talks had to drag on for 3 months, and I was there. That time, our special assistant, the late Dr. Joshua Nkomo, myself. The talks dragged on for almost 3 months and needed the intervention of Presidents Kaunda, Machel, and Nyerere to succeed. The British government, then under Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, promised to fund the land reform program in an independent and sovereign Zimbabwe. The American government also promised to help fund the program. Strictly speaking, the primary component of the program was the transfer of land from minority to majority ownership. The Lancaster House Constitution, largely a compromise document, placed a halt to the transfer of land for a period of 10 years, except on a willing buyer, willing seller basis. At the lapse of that constitutional requirement, that is after 10 years, the government intended to move on the program of land acquisition. But such implementation had to be postponed because for fear that the move would have jeopardized the delicate political processes in Namibia and South Africa. In other words, if we had moved on the land matter in 1990, at the beginning of 1990, I'm not very certain what would have happened to Namibia and indeed to South Africa itself. We came to an understanding with the liberation movements of Namibia and South Africa that were to postpone this program. And this aspect is always missed by a lot of people. It's important, a point. With the principle of willing buyer, willing seller, failing to gain a foothold mainly because of the unrealistic and exorbitant price demanded by the farmers, the process was not helped either by the decision of the Labour government of Prime Minister Tony Blair to renege on these obligations. You remember Tony Blair came into power in 1997. Clare Short, the then Minister of Overseas Development, in a letter to the Zimbabwean authorities in 1997, stated, and I quote, "I should make it clear that we do not accept that Britain has special responsibility to meet the cost of land purchase in Zimbabwe. We are a new government from diverse background without links to former colonial interests. My own origins are Irish, and as you know, we were colonized, not colonizers, close quote." This is from Clare Short in writing, and we've got the letter. I can give you the letter to you if you need it. In other words, saying we're washing our hands off the Lancaster House Agreement. It's none of our business. Look after yourselves. That's what it meant. And therefore, the 1998 Land Conference, which many of us like to refer to, failed because the British, the main player had bolted out. While the foot dragging continued in the capital cities, so did the patience of the landless and their local leadership run out. Thus, in 2000, one chief Soswe of the Weza area, east of Harare, moved in with these landless people to occupy, not to invade, to occupy some of the nearby farms. The war veterans, landless also, then joined in the effort. So it was never the war veterans who started the movement. It was the chiefs, because those are the sole, you know, historically, the land was looked after by the chief. But they were displaced, as you know. But now they were saying in 2000, we have to move on the land, the chiefs. And then later on, as I say, the war veterans also followed. The government, of course, had to move in to sanitize the occupations through a series of legal instruments, including the principle of one person, one farm. And the sizes, of course, were now looked at in terms of ecological factors and, of course, climatic conditions. We had at that time a number of absentee landlords in the UK owning 10 to 15 farms in Zimbabwe, coming once a year for hunting purposes, with thousands of our people squatting on sandy soils and rocky areas. But somebody in London, House of Lords, coming once a year for hunting purposes on 15 of his farms. This status quo was expected to remain like that ad infinitum. It so happened that the year 2000 was a parliamentary election year, which included the entry into the fray of the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, a party led by former trade unionist Morgan Tsvangirai. A year earlier, the MDC had been formed with the backing of mostly the white commercial farmers who were opposed to land acquisition, and external partners, including the British and the American government. It is important to highlight the fact that the pre-2000 election environment in Zimbabwe created from within and from outside the country repeated itself throughout other elections to come in 2002 presidential and 2005 parliamentary. That very same environment is equally evident even today, as we move to the 2008 election. In 2000, and I quote here, Mugabe had violated fundamental property rights by seizing white-owned farms, close quote. And the answer to that was supposed to be an emphatic loss of ZANU-PF in the legislative polls. When the MDC failed to win, there were allegations of voter intimidation and violence leveled against ZANU-PF and the government. A firm agenda of regime change was instituted by Prime Minister Blair and President George W. Bush. The program was, among other things, tailored to support the opposition and civil society hostile to the government to achieve that objective. When the MDC lost the presidential elections in 2002, the new accusation was that, and I quote, Mugabe had stolen the election and was therefore heading an illegitimate government, close quote. That was despite the fact that reputable organizations such as the African Union, Non-Aligned Movement, SADC, ECOWAS, a number of other regional and international, interregional organizations had observed the elections and they declared them free and fair. When one is looking at the situation in Zimbabwe, this given background is very important. From the West point of view, ably supported by a massive media empire and the economic might by way of the comprehensive economic sanctions on the country, they are no targeted sanctions, they are comprehensive sanctions. The electoral process in Zimbabwe can only be free and fair if and as when President Mugabe and his ZANU-PF have been removed from office for his sins on land reform. In other words, the elections can only be fair and free in Zimbabwe if the opposition wins. That is the position. Because they've declared also the opposition that when they're in power, they're prepared to revisit the land issue and return some of the farms to those who are in London. It is therefore important that the background to the 2008 election should be viewed in this light. The theme, as we speak now about the 2008 elections, and I quote, Mugabe is presiding over an ailing economy. You see how it has been shifting. He's now presiding over an ailing economy and trampling on human rights of his people. So he must go, close quote. This is from London and Washington. We are not an extension of Britain or of America, and we shall never be a colony again. From the outside, the picture being portrayed is one of a bad situation which should not be allowed to continue. The idea is to wage a massive media campaign against Zimbabwe. You see it every day here. Massive media campaign. Of course, the question is who owns the media. If you look into the ownership of the media, even here in South Africa, it will tell you exactly where the problem is. So the idea is to wage a massive media campaign against Zimbabwe, and with the economic hardships, the people would be expected to vote out President Mugabe and ZANU-PF. President Bush, during his recent visit to Africa, and he was in Tanzania when he spoke this, I was listening to him, reiterated his government's continued support for the opposition and civil society in the regime change agenda. The same, of course, applies to Britain. There has been some deliberate, if not mischievous, distortion of the exercise to delimit constituencies. I've seen this in the papers here. It is neither the government nor the ruling party which carried out the delimitation process. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, which is constitutionally empowered to carry out the delimitation process, spent considerable time moving around all the country's provinces, holding consultations with all political parties and other stakeholders such as civic groups, chiefs, headmen, councillors, and ordinary people. ZANU-PF, the MDC factions, there are two MDCs, and another smaller one called ZANU-NDONGA of the late Reverend Abanenge Sithole, were consulted and they all gave their inputs to the delimitation exercise. Extensively consulted. As a result of the Constitutional Amendment number 18, which was co-sponsored by ZANU-PF and the MDC, both senatorial and House of Assembly constituencies were increased. Co-sponsored. The Senate will now have 93 members, 6 from each province, directly elected by voters, 10 provincial governors, the president and deputy president of the Council of Chiefs, 16 chiefs, 2 from each province, and 5 senators appointed by the president. Members of the House of Assembly, I've got some copies, a few copies, which I hope the Madam Chair will give out after this, please. Because once I give them out now, there'll be no, I'll be speaking to myself. So, members of the House of Assembly have been increased from 150 to 210, all of whom would be directly elected. In other words, the President has no more power to appoint anybody into the House of Assembly. And this is an agreement between ZANU-PF and the two factions of the MDC, as reflected in Amendment number 18. Harare has 210 House of Assembly seats throughout the country. Harare has 29, the highest constituencies. And that is supposed to be the stronghold of the opposition. It's the highest. It's never talked about. It's the highest. But it's never talked about. Bulawayo has got 12 constituencies. Midlands, 28. Manicaland, 26. Mashonaland Central, 18. Mashonaland East, 23. Mashonaland West, 22. Maswingo, 26. Matabeleland North, 18. And Matabeleland South, 18. I'll show you how we get to these figures, because there's been so much mischief from some quarters about how these figures were arrived. In the elections to be held on 29th March, ward voters' rolls will be used instead of the constituency voters' roll as in the past. In other words, all wards is where people are going to vote for pay ward, but a ward must not cross into another constituency. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission delimited a total of 1,958 wards throughout the country. 1,958 wards throughout the country. As I've said, a lot of unfounded criticism has been leveled against the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, even when the facts are so clear for everyone to see. The Operative Electoral Act and the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission Act became the law governing elections beginning 1st February 2005, replacing the old Electoral Act. Under Section 61 of the Constitution, ZEC, that is Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, was established as the election management body. The whole election is under the care of this body, like we have here under the IEC. Same thing. So there's no body involved there except ZEC itself. It is mandated, among other things, to delimitate wards and constituencies into which the country is divided for purposes of elections, and to run presidential, parliamentary, and local government elections, as well as referendums. This function includes the preparations and conduct of elections, as well as voter education. The principles that guide the delimitation of wards and constituencies are enshrined in subsection 6 under section 61 of the Constitution. Subsection 6 provides that in dividing the country into wards and House of Assembly constituencies, ZEC should give due consideration to the following. A, the area's physical features. B, the means of communication within the area. C, the geographical distribution of registered voters. D, the community of interest between registered voters. advised that after delimiting the wards and House of Assembly constituencies, the 60 elective senatorial constituencies are delimited by assigning to each senatorial constituency a House of Assembly constituency or two or more contiguous House of Assembly constituencies, as the case may be. In order to enhance the participation of stakeholders and electorate at large, the exercise was decentralized to the province and the district levels. Accordingly, provincial and district delimitation committees were set up throughout the country. The district delimitation committees reported to the provincial delimitation committee or committees. The provinces reported to the National Delimitation Committee, comprising the secretariat of the commission under the overall supervision of the chief election or elections officer. The whole process was carried under the supervision of the commission, comprising 7 commissioners. The voter population, as at the date of finalizing the delimitation report, was 5,612,464. This was by December 4, 2007. In terms of the law, the number of voters in a given House of Assembly constituency must be as nearly as possible equal to the number of voters in each of the other House of Assembly constituencies. Following this principle, ZEC established that the average number of voters in each House of Assembly constituents is 26,726. This was done by dividing, this is important, by dividing the total number of voters in the country, which I've already given you a figure of 5 million, something, by 210 of House of Assembly constituencies into which the country is divided. The Zimbabwe Constitution allows for 20% above and 20% below average number of registered voters per House of Assembly constituency. 20% of 26,726 is 5,345.5, rounded up to 5,345. Using this formula, ZEC ascertained that the maximum number of voters in any constituency would be 26,726 plus 5,345, which equals 32,071, and the minimum number would be 26,726 minus 5,345, which equals 21,381. Accordingly, the number of voters in the House of Assembly constituencies would range between 21,381 to 32,071. That's how it was arrived at. Clear arithmetic, not even mathematics. Clear. But no, some rumors are circulating. How did these constituencies, what constituencies, get to the figures? In the area of voter education, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission produces its own voter education material, just like the IEC here. That's important. There must be no interference with that body. In the past, where the problem of NGOs producing their own material, some of them total out of context in terms of the election, you would wonder what this means. But there must be systematic voter education that people don't get lost. No person other than the commission or a person or institutions appointed in terms of the law or a political party shall provide voter education unless such person is a citizen of Zimbabwe or permanent resident of Zimbabwe or an association of persons consisting exclusively of citizens or permanent residents of Zimbabwe. That's the law. The voter education activities shall be funded solely by local contributions or donations. Foreign contributions or donations are prohibited, except where the donations are made to the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. Fine. That's a body by law which must supervise it. You can donate to those, but not to any other. Moyo NGO. I want donations. What Moyo NGO? Political parties which have a demonstrable level of voter support beyond a certain threshold receive a certain amount of support from the National Treasury. If your party has got 15 seats in the House of Assembly, you get a percentage of that in terms of support from the National Treasury. So far, it's ZANU-PF and the MDC who really get support from the National Treasury. These laws and regulations have been passed because we do not believe in open-ended funding for political parties and processes from external sources. The verdict of our people expressed through elections should manifest freely, uncontaminated by outside money. Yet another unfounded concern relates to the composition of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. Regarding the appointment of the members of the commission, the act is clear that the president will appoint the chairperson of the commission after consultations with the Judicial Service Commission and four other commissioners from a list of seven nominees submitted by the Parliamentary Committee on Standing Rules and Orders. The chairperson of the commission is supposed to be a person qualified to be a judge of the High Court or Supreme Court. In line with the provisions of the Act establishing ZEC, His Excellency the President appointed members of the commission after bipartisan consultations in our parliament. High Court Judge George Shueshe is the chairperson of the commission. The members of the commission are appointed from a list of names submitted by the Parliamentary Committee on Standing Rules and Orders, which is chaired by the Speaker of Parliament and is made up of members of parliament from all parties. So this notion that Mugabe is picking people from the streets, I think it's totally mischievous. It is therefore disingenuous for some political formations for now to turn around and question the legitimacy and integrity of this constitutional body and its composition when they were part of it. According to the Electoral Act, Chapter 2.13, Subsection 110, Subsection 3, where two or more candidates for president are nominated, and after the first round of elections, with no candidate receiving a majority of 51% of the total number of valid votes cast, a second election shall be held within 21 days after the previous election. We've got four candidates now. If none of them get 51% of the vote on the 29th, the top two will have to go for another rerun, and that must be done within 21 days. Very democratic. In a runoff election, only the two candidates who would have received the highest and next highest numbers of valid votes cast in the first round are eligible to contest the runoff election, as I've said. If after runoff election the two candidates receive an equal number of votes, parliament reconfigures itself into an electoral college and elects one of the two candidates as president by secret ballot. That is the law. The voter's roll is still open as I speak. I can see my friend, the Honorable Tony Leon, is worried about the time. I'm finishing soon. The voter's roll is still open and inspections are continuing just to make sure that you are there. The nomination court set on 15 February 2008 and registered 4 presidential candidates and 976 candidates for the two houses of parliament. ZEC officials as well as others from the civil society, such as the Zimbabwe Election Support Network, have embarked on a countrywide voter education campaign. Our law enforcement agencies have tightened security with a countrywide ban on carrying of dangerous weapons such as knives, guns, machetes, etc. The parties have started campaigning in earnest. I was home last week. It's exciting. So peaceful to the annoyance of some people. The atmosphere is overall peaceful, with the exception of a few incidents here and there which happened among the youth, I think, once or twice. But the police have been able to get these youths at that particular occasion. I wish to add that some, of course, of these youths get too excited here and there, but the situation is totally under control. Now, invitations to observe elections are already being rolled out. Interested media houses and organizations are free to apply for accreditation to observe the elections. Applications may be made directly to Zimbabwe or through the diplomatic missions where they are available. I've been receiving so many applications in Swale, and we've been processing them as quickly as we can. But of course, you know, even the Bible says men were called and a few were chosen. So you can't go against the Bible. But of course, for the purpose of internal arrangements, I am satisfied with the work of ZEC to date, in particular its decision to extend the inspection of the voters' roll. As I've said already, ZEC is headed by a High Court judge. But sometimes I wonder, when I see some picketing at my embassy by a few sponsored groups, so we asked one, "Why? What are you doing?" He says, "Well, we're also given some money for lunch." Well, of course, why would they refuse to have lunch? So why not loiter around also for that hour and go and have lunch? But of course, these groups masquerade as whatever. But I can assure you, everybody's free to go home and vote if you're registered. What is your problem? Go and vote. Coming to SADC, I'm about to finish. The SADC Extraordinary Summit, held in Dar es Salaam in March 2007, mandated His Excellency President Thabo Mbeki to mediate between Zimbabwe's main political parties, ZANU-PF and MDC, with a view to bring about conditions for the holding of free and fair elections in the country. A free and fair election would, according to the terms of reference, help unlock the political and economic differences and put the country on a recovery program. What that essentially entailed was a convergence of minds of the parties concerned. While cognizant of the need for a new constitution, the parties agreed that given the limited time at hand, because elections according to the Constitution must be held in March this year, and there was no way you could introduce a new Constitution within a month, The MDC, of course, had said, well, why don't you take this draft constitution to parliament? He said, no, it must be subjected to the wishes of the people. You can't conclude a constitution in parliament without consulting the people. It would be an insult. This is why we had to come up with amendment number 18, co-sponsored by the two parties, because there was no way we could have the constitution before elections. Earlier we said, let's have the elections postponed to 2010 so that we deal with these matters. So I said, no, Mugabe wants to buy time, stay in power. Fine. Let's have them then in 2008 as required by the constitution. Oh, no, it's a bit too early. So what should we do? Act unconstitutional everywhere. And then we shall be said to be a good nation. We could not do that. So this is why we had also to come into contact with our colleagues to amend the Public Order Security Act, the IPA, which is Information Act, the Broadcasting Services Act. All these were done as part of the mediation by President Thabo Mbeki. The only outstanding matter was the draft constitution, which we said can only be handled after the elections, obviously, because we have taken care of most of the concerns and amendment number 18, co-sponsored by the two parties, who are now jumping ship and say, no, we want a new constitution. From where? So this was done. President Mbeki briefed his colleagues at SADC, at the AU in Ethiopia, all endorsed by these colleagues, and we all agreed that this is the way to move forward. So in our view, President Mbeki, the South African government, the South African people have done sterling work in terms of our situation. And we remain very grateful to all of you. And therefore, the baby is now with us. Let us pass it nicely. And on the 29th, let us all have a good tea party and say the job has been done, mission accomplished. But of course, we still have problems. Problems of comprehensive sanctions. People keep on saying targeted. They are not targeted sanctions. They are comprehensive. When a country is subjected to a situation where you have no lines of credit, no balance of payments, companies are threatened not to invest in that country, tourists are being told not to go to that country, then you say they are targeted. Unless my English is wrong, but I was taught English by the English, and I think it's correct. It cannot be targeted. And the problem we have is that of external interference. That remains our biggest problem. And as I say, British Prime Minister today, Gordon Brown, writes a letter to the President of the Law Society of the UK, telling him that the British government is not going to leave Zimbabwe alone, and we're increasing our amount from £2.2 million to £3.3 million, obviously in line with regime change. And do you think we can keep quiet? The letter is there. I've got the letter. Written to the President of the Law Society of the UK. This had to force President Mwanawasa just last week to say, hands off Zimbabwe. The EU-Africa summit was a tremendous success. Gordon Brown was the only loner who was not there, because President Mugabe was there. How can you think so low to fear a man? Because if you were there, you'd be asked to address, and you won't back it, because you don't have the facts. But President Mwanawasa told a press conference last week or 2 weeks ago in Lusaka that it was wrong for Western governments to mislead the world into believing that the only election that could be deemed free and fair is one in which President Mugabe is defeated. He was speaking in his capacity as chairman of SADC. President Mwanawasa continued, and I quote, "I want to urge countries in Europe, the United States, Canada, and Australia to leave the Zimbabwe government alone. They are creating a problem by thinking that an election must be free and fair if only the opposition wins." The SADC chairman said the regional grouping was looking forward to sending representatives to monitor Zimbabwe's synchronized polls, and they are most welcome. We've invited 57 groups, the entire of Africa, the whole of NAM, South America, Europe, we've taken, of course, Russia. Yeah, Russia is there. Very much. They've already arrived. They're arriving. But we cannot invite those who have already said the elections can only be free and fair if the opposition wins. They've decided already. So why come? You've got your verdict, you've already written your report before coming. So why come? So we are not apologetic about anything. The West, unfortunately, has excluded itself from the election. But the ambassadors who are positioned in Zimbabwe are welcome to represent their countries and observe the elections, whether they are from the West or from where. But we are not going to allow people who have already declared the results to come and observe what. So let me say the last sentence, frankly. It is indeed time for contestants in Zimbabwe to start campaigning and stop complaining. There's no time for complaining. Campaign. I equally hope that time has now come for those with other views to realize that a free and fair election in Africa is not only that where the opposition wins. The people of Zimbabwe shall freely speak through the ballot on the 29th of March 2008, and as they've done in the past, let us all listen, respect, and accept their voices. I thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, Dr. Moyo, for your very interesting input. I love you more because
I think
it's necessary for you to be able to give all the facts as to what is happening in Zimbabwe. There will be questions. Yeah, we are going to have questions.
But they're not enough, I'm sure. We'll have to make more.
Yeah.
And there's also a press statement, Madam Chair, which I issued last week, which I thought would be useful for the members as well.
Okay.
It can also be distributed.
Okay. In terms of questions, we'll go down the train. Any questions? Huh? Okay, let's start at the bottom. Okay, Tony, you start.
Madam Chair,
let's just take the name. Mr. Sibande. Okay. You have the name, Madasa. Chico. And, you want to speak? No. Okay. Mr. Tony Leon, please.
Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Before we start, everybody will be allowed one question and one question only, and please make it short and sweet. We don't want a huge speech from each person.
Well,
thank you.
Well, with respect to the ambassador's remarks, which to me... the suspension of disbelief did trigger an enormous number of questions.
I'm sure there's in the second round you can have another go at it.
Well, I don't know how this is going
now
to
work. Now let's everybody have a chance at it.
Well, I'd like to ask a question. I have many questions, but let me restrict it to the issue of the media, both inside and outside Zimbabwe. The Media Monitoring Project in Zimbabwe says that the public media in Zimbabwe is grossly biased in favor of President Mugabe. Statement made by that NGO is, the public media is engaged in a propaganda war which romanticizes and promotes the ruling party and denigrates its rivals. Then we've got the situation inside this country. On the Weekender, Ambassador, you are quoted in the newspaper The Weekender saying that the SABC in South Africa trumpets British falsehoods, unquote. That's your description of our broadcasting media. How are, first of all, you going to assure this committee and the wider world that, in fact, the domestic, largely ZANU-owned media and government-owned media in Zimbabwe is not, in fact, simply promoting one party to the exclusion of others? And how are you going to ensure that, given your own bias against the SABC in this country, that that broadcasting entity and the many news organizations in South Africa, including the Sunday Times, 702 Radio, and others, actually receive accreditation for the election in Zimbabwe? And what are their prospects of achieving such accreditation, given your own views on the state broadcaster in South Africa?
Thank you. Mr. Sibande?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know, Chairperson, am I authorized to comment and then ask a question?
Very, very short comment.
Okay, fine.
Some questions.
Okay. It's more than 2 minutes. Chairperson, you see, I think, Ambassador, you were correct that we were together in the trenches in Spolile and Wanki, fighting the very same cause, but there are challenges. And then my question is that as the challenges arises, there are a lot of people who have fled Zimbabwe, who believe that they fled Zimbabwe, in particular who are here in South Africa. How are those people are going to be allowed to participate in their country's election? And then the other one, which has to cut me, the issue of comprehensive sanction, that people are quiet about it. To me, it's like you take a knife and stab the person. When the person said, "Don't kill me," he said, "No, I'm not killing you, but I'm stabbing you." Because sanction started long ago. And I want you to find out from my own view that how is the reaction from the opposition party? Because they are quiet about sanction, but sanction is there. So how is their attitude towards the sanction? Are they supporting the sanction or what is about? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to say, Comrade Ambassador, just to underline the point that I want to make, just like Sibanda said, I think for some of us in South Africa, when we look at the issue of Zimbabwe politically, we're not motivated by the calls that come from the West, as you said, UK or US, but because of the intrinsic value of some of these issues, the issue of civil and political rights, because those are important in themselves, regardless of who is calling for them. So in that light, I'd like to express my concern by also a question as to whether if ZANU were to lose the election, ZANU-PF, hypothetically, you would accept that result. The reason I'm saying that is that some of the security heads are reportedly to have said they wouldn't accept such an outcome.
Maybe I should start by saying that I'm wondering, by way of a comment, what you meant by harmonized elections, the significance of that. Then my question here would be an impression, or shall I say a picture is given that Zimbabwe's economy has totally collapsed. And if so, what is to be done in a very short term, perhaps also in a long term, about the economy? Because I'm sure, as you're aware, living in this country, it also affects this country. since my questions are very short, I also want to know how much how much ZANU gets and MDC gets for funding. Thank you.
With interest, and so it's been good to hear you talk about that again. And I just wondered whether, you know, you feel that you lost some ground there or not. I don't know. But my question is, you mentioned that you have four candidates running, you know, to run for the presidency. Now, there is this candidate who is called Mr. Makoni. I don't know, what is the name of his party?
Simba
Makoni, yeah. Now, my understanding is that when he actually announced that he was going to stand for election, he was then removed from the party, from ZANU, being a member of ZANU PF. And I would like to just find out why that had to be the case. What is your question? And then the other thing related just perhaps to that is you mentioned that, no funding from outside, which is correct. And that funding will come from government proportionally. Now, somebody who is therefore leading a new party, where is their funding supposed to come from? We know it's expensive to run an election. If they can't get it from government and they can't get it from outside, so how are they going to run their campaign? I mean, I'm relating this to the fact that we are trying to say there should be level, you know, the ground should be leveled for campaigning and all that kind of thing in order for the elections to be judged at the end on the basis of free and fair. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just briefly, Your Excellency, there is this general trepidation that the recent post-electoral political violence in Kenya could become contagious, meaning that if there are those people who feel that they are not satisfied with the outcome of the elections in Zimbabwe, might want to trigger a similar situation in Zimbabwe. I'm just wondering whether there is a contingency plan on the part of the government or some kind of prudence on the part of the four protagonists that they may have to meet and preempt this kind of potential themselves in the interest of national security. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Chairperson. Ambassador, in your style, I heard you speak Ndebele. I shall just comment also a wise word in Setswana. Sidiba fekile sajangwa na mmaho usitile hause atamela. There was no translation. In Sidebele, we know what we're saying to each other. Yeah. All right, fine. In short, it means once bitten, twice shy. And I wish Ndebele should have been translated too. What I'm trying to say, I'm arriving at this. Yeah, Mother, by the way, I've noted that the ambassador is a guest. That is why I would wanted to know. It's a pity, the comment is, it's a pity that we don't have MDC and other people especially the people who have fled into the country. Is it true that there is intimidation or not true?
Thank you.
Thank you. A few comments first and then a question. I think there's a justification for South Africa's choice in seeking to resolve what seems to be a problem or what is a problem in Zimbabwe. There's a vindication of our position, especially by acknowledgement that you took two steps backward, notwithstanding Lancaster House, in 1990, when the TIFA's 10-year period expired, and when you had the international legal authority to act on the land question. But wisdom prevailed because of Namibia and ourselves here. It is true that change of leaders is an abomination. We reject that in South Africa. It is equally true that this comprehensive sanction against Zimbabwe is there to fulfill the interests of a select number of people outside. And I want to link that, if, Madam Chair, with your permission, to what Mr. Seremani has just said, once bitten, twice shy, in Setswana, and untranslated in Ndebele. I think it is very true that we should be very wary of this syndrome, once bitten, twice shy. Our continent has been invaded, occupied, and raped previously. There's a new kind of presence that we have in Africa. In no way seeking to justify the shortcomings in Zimbabwe, but just to use your own notion or presentation that once bitten, twice shy. It means that Africans have got to be doubly conscious of the fact that being bitten once, we have got to be very, very careful as to how we conduct our lives for the future. Now, Mr. Ambassador, my question.
I was relating that to
Okay. Okay. My question is again linked to the equity in funding for the different parties. From your own presentation, it would appear that the ZANU-PF and the MDC will be the larger recipients of funding. Do you think it is a correct manner in which free and fair elections could be held?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to ask one question. Dr. Moyo, Ambassador Moyo, was at pains to say at the beginning of his address, only people of Zimbabwe can tell the world through the ballot who they believe has their best interests at heart. And he was at pains to say to us that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission had everything under control. But yesterday, Secretary General of the Zimbabwean Congress of Trade Unions told the South African public, Mr. Wellington Shebebe, his name is, criticized voter registration, and he told the South African public that the voters' roll was in a shambles and that the media in Zimbabwe was under the control of ZANU-PF. It was a ZANU-PF propaganda machine, that's what he said. Now, I'd just like the ambassador's comment on that.
Question for me, Mr. Ambassador. I think all the points that have been made now are quite valid in terms of the media, in terms of how sanctions is hurting Zimbabwe, and whether the results of the free and fair elections will be accepted by all, very important. And of course, the point that Dr. Pickle made in terms of the economy and the repercussion that it has, not only for Zimbabwe, but for the whole SADC region. And all the other points made by Ms. Malutuli and Ms. Kuzana and Mr. Seramani and everybody else. My question actually relates to the actual election process. Now, after the ballots are cast and the polling, the voting is closed, the votes are supposed to be counted at the polling booth, right? And then they are transported to an office where these are compiled worldwide. Now, I would like to know whether observers are going to be allowed to come. First of all, will they be allowed with party agents in the polling, when the votes are being counted first, and secondly, when they are transmitted to the actual election offices, where they're compiled for the national thing? That is my question. Thank you.
Madam, before you... Oh, it's from Manus in Latin, Chair, Madam Chair. There's not a second round. I actually have a point of order which I'd like you to clarify before His Excellency the Ambassador responds. I wrote to the Chairman of this committee, Mr. Sotoli, in March, and I received a reply on the 5th of March, requesting that the Minister... our Minister of Foreign Affairs and the Department brief this committee on the Zimbabwean election for a very specific reason. Mr. Sotoli responded at our penultimate meeting that this matter was receiving urgent consideration, and he followed that up with a letter to me on the 5th of March saying it was going to be dealt with soonest, unquote, his response. With no explanation were we told that the ambassador was going to come and brief us. And I'm saying this very advisedly for a very specific reason. The ambassador's presentation, with great respect, has been very one-sided and biased. There is a dispute of fact as to whether the mediation between the opposition and the government in Zimbabwe has been successful or a failure. Now, the South African government says it's a success. Both factions of the opposition say that it failed beyond any reasonable doubt. I quote from what Mr. Nkubi said. The question is, the election is being held in less than a fortnight. How is this committee to adjudicate these facts, given the fact that we have one of the parties to dispute here today, and I have absolutely no problem with his presence here, and not one of the other parties, and the mediating party, South Africa, and the government, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, despite being told by the chairman, Mr. Sotoli, that in fact they would be coming to the committee, I have not come to this committee. I wonder if you could clarify that and the context of the ambassador's invitation before you respond.
First of all, I wasn't aware that there was going to be, usually in the past, whenever we've had meetings on Zimbabwe, we always called the opposition and the members of the governing party. What happened at this time, I'm unable to say. I was not in parliament, so as much as I'd like to help you, I am unable to give you a reply. I think when Mr. Sotoli comes back from the ACPEU meeting, we can then discuss it as a committee. But at this point, it's all supposition. I don't have an answer for you, so I don't think we can take this thing further. And I think that's all I have to say to you. The second thing is that, no, Mr. Sibanda, I'm not allowing any more debate on this issue. What we will do now is ask Ambassador Moyo to, actually, I agree with you, it is a pity that we didn't have all parties present here. But as I say, I don't know why this has happened, so we'll leave it at that.
Yes, Honorable. Thank you very much indeed, Honorable. I'm sorry, I'll have to rush my answers as well because I'm taking a total flight. I have to be in Harare this evening.
Let us understand one thing, that we are saying these elections are not being run by government. These elections are run by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. And any complaints one has must be directed to the commission. Just as the situation here, I'm sure, would also direct our complaints, if there are any, to the IEC. Having said that, I was in Zimbabwe just last weekend. I'm going back tonight. I was very impressed by the peace, by the coverage of parties in terms of the radio, the TV, the newspapers. Of course, there are some coverages where you have to pay in terms of advertisement. And you cannot complain that since I have not paid, why am I not being projected? So that is what is happening. But there's one aspect also which we must also look at. There are independent newspapers in Zimbabwe. They never refer to ZANU-PF. They're all about the opposition. And they're circulating everywhere, including the Zimbabwe, which is printed in London, I think, by Wilf Mbanga. They're all circulating. The General Mujuru is under house arrest. President Mugabe collapsed the other day. So it's something which is never there. But you let them circulate. It's happening. What is concerning us is outside broadcast, beamed to Zimbabwe from Washington, from London, every day, compelling the opposition to engage in excitement, in incitement, for regime change purposes. And nobody talks about those broadcasts. Why? They must stop. We can't have a situation where outsiders are compelling Zimbabweans on a daily basis to undertake an uprising. Beamed to Zimbabwe every day, Studio 7, Radio WRS, Radio, there are about 7 of them on a daily basis. Sponsored from Washington and London. And nobody talks about them. They're okay. Anyhow, it's never a fair world, I suppose. But I suppose let us also be fair to ourselves. But referring to the SABC, I never said exactly what you said. What was happening in SABC, we've got a number of observers who are going to Zimbabwe, some of them already there, to observe these elections. I gave a list and sent it to SABC, a list of organizations, including the ACP, as you are aware, ACP, AU, SARS, SADC, COMESA, ECOWAS, NAM, or so many, and the countries. What did they think about the whole day? Well, it appears this election will be very difficult because Iran, it's only Iran, it appears, Venezuela, and Libya, which have been invited. Which is not true. I had to take up the phone and say, this is not correct. Why do you want to mislead the public by giving such an impression? So all I'm saying is, say, let us be fair, let us give facts, and let's not pretend otherwise, because that is not true. It's not just Iran and Venezuela and Libya, which are observing elections in Zimbabwe. And that's what the broadcast kept on saying. And that's not right. Now, going to Honorable...
Sorry to interrupt you, sir. But this quote attributed to you about the SABC trumpeting British Bolshevism,
no,
is that untrue?
That's not correct.
There's no dialogue. Let the ambassador please complete.
Honorable Sivande, yes, they are really comprehensive sanctions. There's no doubt. They're not targeted sanctions. That's a fact. And everybody knows it. And all economic saboteurs we have in Zimbabwe are the greatest, biggest refugees we have in London now. They are welcomed. Bankers who have stolen millions, they seek refuge in UK. They are all there. They are given red carpet because that helps. Once the economy collapses, it's better for regime change agenda. They are there. But we say, bring them back. No. We can't bring them back now. Let's see how after the election. Why? There we are. We don't mind that. But voters in exile, we have said we've got laws running these elections.
during negotiations facilitated by President Mbeki here, these matters were raised. And it was, the two parties went back to Parliament. It was not possible to make these people outside vote outside, because it's difficult, one, first of all, to know who is who. How do you put them down in a register? How do you make sure that these are Zimbabweans? It's an exercise on its own, which takes time. But in the end, it was said, no, let's encourage them to come home and vote. Some are going home as I speak. They're going to vote and come back. Fine. There's so much peace. But as I say, the peace is annoying some people, because they would have expected some mayhem by now. There must be chaos. There must be, people must be chasing each other. So it's disturbing the regime change agenda, this peace. And we understand why. But we thank you, Honorable, for the comments. Honorable Matala, sorry? Mudasa, your writing is not good enough, eh? Mudasa? Is it Madala? No, no, it's not a Madala, no. And Dala, of course, I know. I know. Mudasa, sorry, yeah, my apologies, Honorable. It's my sister here, her writing is not very familiar to me. And now, you are saying ZANU-PF lost the election. Sure. We must accept the results. We have to accept the results. And frankly speaking, any statement issued by anybody, to me, is irrelevant. What is important is that the observers are there. They are all watching what's going on. Results will be declared. And whichever party wins, it must be respected that that is the party which has won the election. That is what I can say. Anybody can express his or her opinion, or what can we do? Then we let them, let those. But the truth is that there is a process going on. The observers there. And they let whoever wins, win the election. Free and fair. That's what we're looking forward to. Honorable Peko, harmonize the elections. This was agreed during the negotiations here. That this time we're going to have the presidential, the parliamentary, and the council, local government elections. That's what we mean by harmonized in this case. All done in one day. And this is what was agreed during the negotiations by the parties. And that it will be ward-based. In other words, people are going to vote at their wards where they are registered. You used to vote anywhere in the constituents in the past. But this time you vote at the ward where you are registered. And this is why we came up with 1,900 and something, I can't remember the figure exactly, of wards, which I've already mentioned. And then, of course, Honorable Peck also was talking about the economy. Well, we're doing all we can, given the harshness of the comprehensive sanctions. But I believe myself that if these elections are through and people are clear in their minds that these elections were free and fair, let those, please, who are in charge of these illegal sanctions think twice and remove them. Maybe otherwise they won't enter the kingdom. Honorable Tuli, yes. Lancaster, did you lose some ground? Of course we did. It was a compromise document by the end of the day, the Lancaster House Constitution. This is why President Nyerere, President Kaunda, President Mashele to come to intervene, because we had almost packed our bags that we are leaving. We are not going to go on with this anymore. But they persuaded us, say, please continue and let's look at this. And this is why it had to be done, because it propelled also the liberation of Namibia and of South Africa. It was very important. And this is why I said we had to stop at 10 years. Say we cannot now implement this land thing because it will affect Namibia's processes and South Africa's processes. So we're quite clear about our agenda on the continent. We remain very clear. Absolutely. Then Makoni, you were talking about four candidates. Why was Makoni removed from ZANU-PF? We've got a constitution, a party constitution. If you leave the party and stand on your own, you are no more part of the party. The Constitution says clearly, you have expelled yourself. You have not been expelled at all. You have expelled yourself. That's what the Constitution says of the party. You can't run with the hares and chase with the hounds. You have to decide where you are. So young Makoni must know where he belongs. He belongs to that group where he has gone too far. I wish him well. But you cannot remain a member of the party when you are now an independent. And we cannot change the law, of course, just suit Makoni. It's not in terms of funding. He has to look. I saw him in a diabetes man in South Africa. So many that he must put your money in his account in Nedbank. Account number what? Account number. I can't remember the account number. I said, I've got it here. At Nedbank, yeah? So I know some have already put. I won't mention their names, but I'm sure some have already put. But we hope that money will be put to good use. It must not end up in the Kruger National Park. Pardon? Oh, of course. You cannot just go into this exercise without being funded. You get funded. And you must report also how things are going. Yeah, you must report.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, we won't go into details, but we're quite in picture. Honorable Skosan, of course, about Kenya, I can assure you, we're all determined not to see the Kenya situation is repeated in Zimbabwe. This is why I'm saying some people are disappointed even by now that there's no violence in Zimbabwe. They would have wanted it, and they can't get it, and they won't get it. We want a peaceful election. The results will be declared. We want peace after the elections, and those who break the law will have to be dealt with accordingly. We don't want that situation to be dealt in Zimbabwe. But you can imagine, if it had happened in Zimbabwe, did not have ended as it ended. Some people would have been, I don't know what to say, but I know what I mean. You know what I mean. Itching to get into Zimbabwe. But of course, police, as I've said, they've already preempted the situation. We don't carry all these dangerous weapons in this, no more, until after the elections. We don't need that at all. So We're very grateful to your concern, because it's a concern, really, which we must not allow to take hold on the continent. And my honorable Seremane, is it true that there's intimidation or not true? Well, if there is, surely the police must deal with that situation. And if there are any reports to the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission of any intimidation, they must take care of that. That is why they're there. But so far, as I say, it's so peaceful, it's so beautiful. I was in Zimbabwe and I went everywhere. It's fantastic. You see people putting posters, ZANU-PF is putting theirs there, MDC is putting theirs there, the two MDCs, another one is putting there, the other one of Makoni is putting there, the other one of Taungana is putting there, and they clap hands. That's nice. That's what it should be. But people don't like that, Comrade Sarama. Whatever, Sarama, they don't like to see people not fighting. Well, of course, we don't want storms. We should wonder, why should we look forward to that? Yeah, no, I think it will be quite well. It's going on very well. I think we are going on well. I think so, really. Then Honorable Ram Gobin, I totally agree with the observations which you advanced earlier. And of course, talk about the funding. Really, as I say, the law is there. Unless the law is changed, we have to go by the law, which was passed by both houses and by both parties. If they want to change it, let them change it. And the next parliament, they say, no. Even if there's one MP, let him be funded. Fine. That is the law. There was no problem with that. But at the moment, there is a law which we must go abide by, and that's what we're doing. Honorable Camera, I was at pains, not at all. I was not at pains with anything. I'm really at pains, actually. I'm not at all at pains. I was not at all at pains. I can assure you I'm very comfortable. And, Chibedu, of course, is not just a trade unionist. He's a very
well-known activist of the MDC. So obviously he was on a mission, which we understand. You must campaign for your party as well, which is what I think he was also projecting. But you've got a right to belong to any party. It's not a crime. So if he was speaking on behalf of his colleagues in MDC, there's nothing wrong, but let's have the facts also. Let's not be too excited about things which are not there. And I think that is what it is. And then, of course, the Honorable Chairperson, I can only thank you so much for your comments. And, of course, in terms of the counting will be done at ward level. All the party agents will all be there from A to Z. In other words, if the ballot box comes, because we're using translucent ones, we're not using those ones which you have to have some to check whether there's anything inside. Translucent ones, so every candidate and their agents will have to check and see that it's thoroughly empty. And they remain there. At the end, sealed, signed by all, including the agents, transported. The counting is done there, at the ward level. The counting is done there at the ward level. It's only the results which are not transmitted. You have to sign for the results as well, all the parties. It's only the results which are transmitted now to the command center in a given constituency, so that they are all put together. So there's no way you can pretend that you are clever. It has to be done unless the agents go to sleep. I don't know. But nobody should go to sleep. Thank you very much.
Hopefully, will observers be allowed to be at the polling station and at the command center?
Well, because frankly speaking, observers are allowed to observe the election process right through, as far as I know. When it comes to the counting, I'm not Zach would be able to answer that. I don't know myself. But certain observers are already there. They are discussing with Zach, with all political parties. They've been meeting, I know, the whole of this last week. And all these issues Honorable Chairperson is raising are issues which I believe they are raising. I don't want to mislead this Honorable Committee, as observers will be involved in the counting or in the observing of the counting. I don't know. But the truth is that they are there. Yes. At the polling station, they'll be there.
Do you have, by any chance, the number of registered voters at this point?
Well, as I say, by the December closing time, I've given you the figure of 5,400,000 and something,
okay.
And that is what was divided by 210 to give each constituency the number plus and minus 20%.
Yeah. Are you sure it's a point of order?
Yes,
it's
a point of order. The Honorable Tony Leon made a remark about the fact that other parties have not been invited by the committee. I'd like to observe that the ambassador represents the government, not a political party. So that's my understanding. If we have a meeting where we invite parties, then all parties should be invited. So that's my understanding, that he represents the government, which includes the opposition.
I need to find out exactly what happened. I wasn't here. I'm not supposed to comment at this stage. Thank you all for coming. Mr. Ambassador and members of the committee, there's some light working for you at room
B8. May I thank you, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members, for your attention. But unfortunately, I have to rush to the airport. My flight is at 2 o'clock. So I have to get to the airport quickly and get on another assignment. Thank you very much, indeed. Yes, please, thank you. Yes, sure. Take my plate, Baba. Yes, Baba. Yes, I'm rushing to the airport.
Even the chicken and mushroom.